Hello, everyone. My name is David Smith, and this is the Armchair Commentary. On this week's episode, how about them Cowboys? The Cowboys are going through an awful season with injuries to Dak Prescott, Zeke with greasy hands, and Jerry Jones not being able to get out of his own damn way. So Steve and I are taking a look back at the Cowboys teams of old. That's right, we're going back to the 90s. Talking about Emmitt Smith and the trade that brought him there. And later in our show, we actually talk about gatekeeping and when it's okay to question someone's fandom. If you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to our social medias. If you could give us a follow, let us know what's going on. Please don't hesitate to interact with us. Let us know what you think about gatekeeping, about the Cowboys, and about our episodes. We love the feedback. And if you're able to support this podcast, please head over to patreon.com/armchair commentary. And take a look at the different tiers. We'd love to be able to start giving some shout outs. We'd love to support you and your endeavors. And we appreciate everyone that takes the time to share this with their friends. Give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. I know it's a lot of asks, but honestly, we couldn't do this without the support from you. So without further ado, how about them Cowboys? Another week. This is one of those... I feel like this happens once a year where everything is cuckoo nuts in the NFL. The Bengals looked otherworldly for a change. The ghosts of all the evil spirits that Aaron Rodgers must have pissed off carried Dalvin Cook to 4 touchdowns and running angrily all over Green Bay, and teams that you thought should win weren't winning. Teams that usually look like hot garbage, except for the Jets. They still look like hot garbage.
The Jets are forever hot garbage, for the record.
Yeah. Shout out to Jeremy Green, and the Sportsocracy. Your Jets are still trash. It was a weird week. I don't know how to quantify it, but this happens in football pretty regularly. I won't say it happens every week. There is the expression any given Sunday, but there were a lot of kind of kooky dukes games that went on, and I don't know if you can explain it, to be honest. Bills won. That was normal. The Steelers looked great against the Ravens. Your Colts looked like the Colts of old, did they not?
I mean, define Colts of old. The Colts of old didn't win via great defense like these modern Colts do, which, by the way, I love. I mean, don't get me wrong, I would still trade Phillip Rivers for young Peyton Manning again, as anyone else in their sane, righteous football mind would. But this new look Indianapolis Colts is it's kind of a blessing in disguise. But we did lose to the Browns, so I'm not overly sold on this team yet.
Tua had his unspectacular debut.
Much like we predicted.
Thank God for an incredible defense. He threw for 93 yards, rushed for none, 2 rushes for a total of 0 yards. He went 12 for 22, 1 touchdown, and was sacked once with 93 yards.
In all fairness, if you saw those two plays in his first appearance in the fourth quarter of the blowout against the Jets, it looked very similar to what we saw from Tua, the quarterback, in a full game. It looked like it wasn't just a sample. Like he had 2 passes for 5 yards, I think, in his first debut. He looked exactly the same. It's just that Brian Flores has created quite the defensive juggernaut over there.
Yes, he has. It still, to me, reeks of too early. And I'm wondering if people that were, I'm still sold on Tua's talent. I think that he's still talented. I'm just wondering if he's going to be one of those guys that just needs time to learn how to, you know, read an NFL defense, run an NFL offense. There's a lot of defensive coaches in the NFL who aren't very good at offense. They're just not. There's a lot of offensive coaches that are terrible at defense as well, and that's why you get a good OC or DC. But I don't know if Flores is known for his offensive mind. I know he's a defensive guy. I know that he knows how to – I mean, he stopped Jared Goff, who I, again, still think is overrated. But is he like – do you think
– hold on. Give him his credit there. He stuffed Jared Goff again, he stuffed Jared Goff once before. You might be quite familiar with it.
I am very familiar with it.
Yeah. Give him that credit.
No, Brian Flores is good. I think he's a good coach.
He's probably the first dingleberry from the Belichick tree that I'd actually think is worth a damn.
He is proving to be a smart hire in Miami. And I mean, isn't he coming out from underneath the specter of Adam Gase?
Yes, I'm walking it back that I've constantly. I should have walked it back before. I forgot about Flores, to be honest with you. Flores was good. Flores has been good since the system started to take effect in Miami. He's been a good thing in Miami. So Brian Flores is the first guy to fall out of the Belichick tree that isn't an absolute useless piece of trash. Shout outs to you, Matt Patricia.
For some reason, Adam Gase still has a job. I'm still the rumor from our friends down in Asheville is that Hines Ward is next in line for that Jets job.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's Hines Ward. Yeah, he's currently he's the receivers coach there.
What, New York?
Yeah, for the Jets.
Then why would you promote anybody involved with that offense?
To be fair, who's he coaching?
Let's run it back here. For the record, I don't think there's ever been a wide receiver head coach in the NFL.
Like just straight up promotion from wide receiver?
No. Literally a former player that was wide receiver, there's been tight ends, a lot of linebackers, a lot of line, like defensive linemen and guys like that. And a few offensive linemen, but I don't think there's been a lot of running backs or wide receivers. Now, there have been quarterbacks too, but he would be the first wide receiver turned into a coach, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, if you're going to pick a wide receiver, Hines Ward would probably be one of the guys you would.
there's very few, if any. What did Frank Reich play?
Frank Reich was a quarterback. He was a backup quarterback.
So we get backup quarterbacks are great coaches, though.
Yeah, because they hold clipboards for 12 or 13 years.
That's right.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the top 26 ever former players head coaches. I'm seeing if there's any one that was ever. They're almost all quarterbacks. Defensive back, Don Shula. Tony Dungy was a corner. I already know that for the Iron Curtain. But he Pro Bowl. What was this guy? Jim Ringo's an NFL Hall of Fame, but he was in blah blah blah. It doesn't tell me what he actually was. I say Pro Bowls. What did he do? Center. Okay, he's a center. Okay, sorry, Mike Mularkey. I doubt Mike Mularkey does not sound like a wide receiver. He was a tight end. There you go. Dick Jaron was a fourth round pick. He was punt returner. Oh, wait a minute.
We got one.
Oh, no, he was a defensive back. He's a defensive back. Never mind. Which is close. Which is very close. It's the cousin, right? Corner and safety. Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher was never a wide receiver. He'd only catch 7 every 9 passes that were thrown to him, though. Defensive back. Yeah, that's what I thought. Herm Edwards was also a corner, if I'm not mistaken, because he was also on – I think he was on the Eagles in the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a corner. I know that one for a fact. Tom Landry. Tom Landry played football. Good Lord. That was back when Nixon played football. Defensive player.
Yeah. So
Chuck Noll was a linebacker.
Yeah.
Jack Del Rio was a linebacker. Bill Cowher was a linebacker. Man, that's really weird to think about someone like Bill Cowher being a linebacker.
I know. It's insane.
Art Schell was an offensive lineman. I already know that. Marty Schottenheimer. Linebacker. Jim Haslett was a defensive player of the year. So, I mean, I don't have to answer that question, though, do I? Michael Singletary is a linebacker, obviously. And that's it. Oh, wait. Leslie Frazier, defensive back. Gary Kubiak. This is going on way too long. I got to cut this up. Quarterback. Mike Munchak. Jesus, I'm like, let's speed it up, and then they don't tell me. But either way, it's definitely not a wide receiver. Don't know what the hell he was. Jim Harbaugh was a quarterback. Forrest Gregg. Yeah, when they're offensive linemen, they don't really tell you what they were. Look, moral of the story is Mike Ditka was a tight end. So, yeah, there's no – I think Hines Ward would actually be a president. Sorry, we might have to cut that down a bit, but, there's never been a wide receiver converted to a head coach. So, the fact that Hines Ward would be the first one really cracked him. Personally, I would have liked to see Randy Moss become a head coach because I feel like his attitude would really go well with the media. But no, seriously, if it's Hines Ward, I hope he's a great job.
But I hope Hines Ward is a great locker room guy. I think he understands the game well enough. He certainly understood his position well enough. But I don't know if he, I don't know if he's going to save the
Jets. Nobody's going to save the Jets. It could be Hines Ward with the spirit of Don Shula and Bill Walsh on either side of his left and right brain, and he still couldn't save the Jets. You could march 2003 Bill Belichick in there with Bill Walsh and like Marty Schottenheimer as his assistants, and still you couldn't save that Jets organization. They're a flaming effing train wreck. Nothing can stop that.
In the words of, I believe it was Romeo Crennel, we are who they thought they were.
Close. You're close. It was Denny. Dennis
Green. Denny, yes. It was Denny Reed. There we go. Yes, after the – wasn't that Edger and James that fumbled?
Wait, they are – they were – I'm off the hook. Yeah, I think it was my man Edger and James. But, like, that was, like, after two
– That's the shell of Edger and James.
Yeah,
that's
that, not, wasn't, that wasn't
that's the guy. Not the edge. No, I understand. I'm – this is not here – I'm not here to poke at Edger and James because he was excellent for you guys for a long time. But, yeah, I believe that was a strip fumble. In like a crazy comeback game. I remember watching it.
But yeah, that was the year the Colts beat the Bears in the Super Bowl because they were who we thought they were, and we didn't let them off the hook. I'm here all week if you need me.
Before we I mean there's a little more football that I want to talk about, in particular some NFC East, which will lead us to what we're talking about today. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the couple of proposals that are being bandied about for the NBA restart. We're not quite there yet, but it's coming up fast. The two on the table, I think, are early December so that they'll be able to get in the Christmas Day games, which, of course, is big-time TV money. And then the other one is, I think, pre-New Year, but I don't think that one's got as much traction. What are your thoughts about the NBA restarting? It'll be without bubble. It'll be in a different kind of way. I'm not entirely sure how they plan on getting it done the way they want to, but what are your thoughts on the NBA restart coming up? And the NHL obviously won't be far behind.
I mean, I think the NHL is always just kind of like following the NBA and see what the NBA does. They use a lot of the same facilities, right? Yes. I know one thing as a Raptors fan, the Raptors aren't coming home. They're going to be, I think they're playing Louisville, if I'm not mistaken. Louisville, Kentucky, I think is where they're going to play. So,
I believe so.
So, I mean, I expect them to be back playing by Christmas Day. That's like the big TV money earner for the NBA. And I think, I think the way things are going down south right now, I'm pretty sure the NBA's rating should rebound pretty well, whereas everyone kind of forgets like the gaslighting that's occurred the last few years. I don't know. I expect the NBA to be back by December 22nd. I think the NHL will be back by February 1st. I think the NBA realizes that like the money is so heavily tied up in the television. And I think you're going to start seeing NBA teams letting fans in the stands. You're going to just, they were never shutting down for like, you know, fan or player safety. They were shutting down because that was what everyone else is doing. Now, I don't think you're going to see packed arenas yet, but you're probably going to see 5,000-10,000 people in basketball games now. Like the NBA is going to try to recoup some of that revenue. They're saying about 18% escrow on salaries. Players are going to kick and whine about that because NBA players are, NBA players are wildly overpaid to begin with. So I imagine them taking pay cuts wouldn't be easy. Like baseball players are wildly overpaid as well at the top end anyway.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. By the way, I don't begrudge NBA players their salaries. It's just like guys making $41, $42 million a year casually to play like, you know, 35 minutes a night is insane to me, but whatever. NBA back. I'm happy about it. Can't wait for it. I wish NBA free agency would start so I'd have something to talk about, but without NBA free agency, it's just like whatever. The basketball's like, we didn't have the draft yet. Like, they're talking about starting the season in a month and a half. We haven't had the draft or free agency. Like, it's wild how, like, they're just trying to cram everything they can in for money. But yeah, that's what we're going to do.
It's going to be, It's going to be quick, I think, to be honest with you. I think that everything is going to come fast and furious, especially right now. So basically, outside of football, everything else is done. Baseball won't be back for a while. since they just wrapped up whatever is left. Plus, they have a labor dispute that they have to figure out. And I know that they weren't exactly pleased with the way that Manfred handled the do we play or not play nonsense and the game negotiation and everything. And I think that that's in for, we're in for a world of hurt. But shout out to Oscar Hernandez on a Silver Slugger win. Hey, let's go Blue Jays. The NBA probably realizes that the majority of American money and a majority of American eyeballs in particular, when you're talking about growing the game and you're talking about getting your share of things, you're going to want to be on. Because I'm going to tell you that when, like, during a typical year, your basketball diehards are there, but there comes a point where there's a lot of sports on and people have a bit of a choice. There is not a lot going on right now.
Are we trying to like cast away like sports lowered ratings? Is that what we're doing right now?
Yeah, I am.
I'm not saying you're trying to. Here's a quick answer for you. There's over 30 million unemployed Americans right now. And probably a lot more that are like living shoestring right now because probably one or someone in a household did. And probably having cable television is probably not a priority. So watching sports is no longer a priority. So when there's that much financial uncertainty, people aren't watching sports. Like, first of all, we live in a generation where people are cutting the cord left, right, and center anyway. Let's just be clear. The rise of the Netflixes and the streaming services and things of that nature have crippled that. But like, it wasn't just basketball. It wasn't just baseball. All sports ratings were down in the United States dramatically. And it wasn't because of social justice protests, although that's a really good right-wing think tank angle to take about it. It's because people can't afford to pay their cable bills, so they're cutting cords and watching them illegal streamed. That's what's happening. Like, I mean, it's so I don't think it's a combination of anything or running up against debates or blah, 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 whatever anyone wants to say it is. I just think there's a lot less people watching television.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably not wrong.
I mean, look at what was it? A few weeks ago, when they couldn't do the direct head-to-head debate because of Trump's COVID thing, they did the town halls with each one individually.
Yes.
Like, didn't Trump only drew like, what, 1.83 million?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not trying to diminish his ratings or whatever the case may be, but 68 million people just voted for him, but only 1.8 watched him. Like, you know, so is it people can't afford television or people, you know, which one is it?
I think there's a fatigue factor going on too. All of this changes depending on what's going on with the economy and what's going on with a vaccine and, you know, if people are allowed in to watch. There are some people who I think are casual fans of sports in general that would in their local market go to games and probably watch on TV locally, but are currently not all that vested since they can't go to support. It's not a fun night out anymore. And even though it may have been expensive, the upper middle class would still enjoy going out to a game. And I think you're not seeing those people as interested in sports as, say, you know, me or you, or, you know, you're more diehard type fans. Like, I mean, if you were asked me, is Steve going to watch basketball when it comes back on? I would say 100%. I know you are.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it illegally, even though I can't afford to pay for cable, whatever it gets to be. It's only because I refuse to get cable, but also my neighbor just set their alarm off on their own car. I just literally watched it happen. Anyway, I would have NBA TV in the online package, but it doesn't play Raptors games. And as a Raptors fan, I find that morally apprehensive. So I got rid of it and I continue to watch it legally. Also, what's really great is when I get to watch Raptors games legally, I get to watch American broadcasters and not have to listen to our Homer announcers. I love that. So I don't like Homer announcers. I like national broadcast crews. I don't want to hear highly like biased announcing. I like hearing it called as down the middle as it possibly can be. So that's why I was thrilled when I was watching an American broadcast of the Rays Jays 2-game slaughter. I just enjoy that more. I hate like, and I get so tired. They come up with nicknames to the players and all that. Like, it's so distracting. So yeah, I will illegally watch all sports because I can get American feeds. I like American National feats. That's all.
Well, I get it. While we're on the topic, where do you come down on Joe Buck? Basically in everything.
Do you remember we had a group chat where I actually thrashed Joe Buck, but it was the wrong Joe.
I was talking about Buck Martinez.
Oh, yes, yes. It was Buck Martinez, who I also think is a buffoon. But that being said, for the listeners at home, we were in a group chat, and I think it was game one or two of the World Series, and Kershaw threw an 86-mile-an-hour slider that got taken for a home run, and everybody just assumed it was a fastball because the velocity difference on that visual is not that far off. And I'm like, no, it was a slider. It was a slider. And it turned into a three-way debate between Dave, Justin, and I because Buck had called it a fastball. Where it was like, so I literally went back and rewatched it and showed everything and like recorded it and screenshot. Like, no, it was a slider. I played baseball most of my life. I know what a slider looks like. But because Buck had called it a fastball, everyone just assumed it was a fastball. And that's why.
Buck Martinez.
Joe Buck. But Joe Buck is even more useless than Buck Martinez. Like, Joe Buck is – his dad was good, though. His dad always had a way of calling, like, great calls. And although I think Joe Buck's most famous call is a ripoff of his father's call, which is like, see you guys later on tonight. Like,
tomorrow.
No, I'll see you guys later on tonight after Kirby Puckett hit a home run in Game 6 of the World Series for the Twins against the Braves in 91. I was like 7. I remember watching it. And he's, see you guys later on tonight because the game went so late in extra innings. So in 2004, Joe Buck's famous call, where he took after his father, was after, or I think Ortiz walked off a home run in Game 4 or 5, and the famous Red Sox Yankees comeback. He said, "See you guys later tonight."
Check out because our episode. There is an iconic episode on the 2004 Red Sox. If you haven't checked it out, check it out already. You can find it.
My friend Derek like extols romantically about the 2004 Red Sox.
He does love his 04 Red Sox.
I think every Red Sox fan's favorite Red Sox team has to be the 04 Red Sox. It's where they became insufferable, where Boston sports fans became insufferable because everything was just going Boston sports fans' way for about a 10-year period. Where like I think Boston has won like what? So there's the 6 Patriots Super Bowls. There is 3 Red Sox World titles. There's a Bruins Cup, and there is a Celtics championship. All in the 2000s. That's a lot of winning for one city. That's a lot. It's nauseating.
Speaking of winning, and this kind of brings us to our topic du jour. I don't know what happened, but the NFC East turned into an absolute, I don't want to call it a cesspool, but it's trash. It is by far the NFC least. Everybody is still somehow in the division race. And nothing really personifies the NFC East more than this year's Dallas Cowboys. And that guy is kind of talking about this current iteration of the Cowboys. It made us think back to when they were actually good and winning. It's the 1990s. So, Steve, I want to take you back to a time when the Cowboys finished 1-15. And new coach, brand new coach after the legendary Tom Landry, Jimmy Johnson steps in and he proposes something a little unorthodox. Would you think that this is one of these addition by subtraction kind of thought processes? Jimmy thought, I need to make a big trade. Now, I don't know if you know this, but he actually tried to trade Michael Irvin first to the Raiders. Did you read that?
Yeah, that has been.
And Al Davis told him, who's going to catch passes for you? He talked him out of the trade.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think Jimmy and Michael had the best relationship at the University of Miami either. But either way, it doesn't really matter because Mike was there for a year before Jimmy came, right? Like Mike was there for Landry's last year, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're correct.
I've actually read a book by Jeff Perlman on the Cowboys. It's really, really, really good. I don't remember what it's called, but there's all kinds of stories about the Cowboys that we can get into if you want to that are not necessarily overly sports related because I do know those. I'll even share you a Charles Haley story while we're here. But I believe he did offer him to Al Davis, and Al Davis said no.
Yeah, He said you need to keep him. He's who's going to catch passes for you. So instead, he decides that he's going to trade Herschel Walker.
Great idea.
Now, at the time, Herschel Walker was probably their best bargaining chip, I would say. Like, he was easily one of the better players. His years in Dallas, he was pretty good. 88, he actually rushed for 1,500 yards.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't bad by any stretch. And they traded him. So they were actually ready to trade him to, I believe it was Cleveland. There were a couple of people that had asked about him. I think Atlanta asked about him, and someone else had asked about him. But they ultimately were going to trade him to Cleveland for, I think, a couple of players and some picks. And they thought that deal was good, but if they can get a better deal, they'll take that. So Jimmy actually started calling around to other managers, telling them what they were going to do. And one of the GMs that he called was in Minnesota. And at this point, it can only be described as, like, people have called it, there's a 30 for 30 where they call it the Great Train Heist or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It is a ridiculous haul for someone. The Vikings thought they were getting the missing piece for their Super Bowl run.
They got a missing piece, all right. Something missing a few pieces. It's like ordering a barbecue that's missing the grill or the screws that hold the grill together. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, well, no, I was just going to say he was good for, according to the video that we watched, which I believe was produced by NFL Films. It might have been ESPN, one of those two.
I think it was a top 10 list, is what
They basically said Herschel Walker was great for two plays in Minnesota and then never again. I mean, never again. 11 games in Minnesota. He had 169 rushes for 669 yards and 5 touchdowns.
It's not that bad.
In Minnesota.
It's not worth what they gave up, mind you, but it's not. Those are bad numbers, but they're not worth it. Here's the thing, and this is a really popular theory in football now that wasn't a very popular theory back then, and it's a theory I expunged in our fantasy football episode in the archives. Running backs are vastly overrated. Like, it's just – if you have a good offensive line and they have competent vision and the ability to start and stop on a dime like most running backs do, you're probably going to be a pretty good running back in the NFL. Now, there's some that are better than others, and there's also all-time great running backs. But history has shown that Emmitt Smith wasn't that great of a running back. Emmitt Smith just ran behind one of the best offensive lines of all time. Sean Alexander wasn't a very good running back, but he ran behind a great left side of an offensive line. LaDainian Tomlinson had great offensive lines. Like, don't get me wrong, these are still good running backs. Edgerrin James had a great offensive line in Indianapolis. So when people give up everything for running backs, it often doesn't work out. There hasn't been – the only running back I can ever think of that's played behind numerous offensive lines and has probably been successful everywhere is like Adrian Peterson. I mean, yes. Also Barry Sanders. But Barry Sanders was either he broke you one for 25 yards or he went backwards for 6 yards a lot of the times. So – but yeah, like I think – for years and years and years, before the West Coast offense was a prevalent thing, and we got to get back to what we're actually going to talk about. But before the West Coast offense was a thing, people put these great value on running backs. And we still do it in fantasy football because the running plays are worth more than running backs. But people don't use running backs like that anymore. And it's become more and more obvious that teams are unwilling to pay running backs because as long as you get someone competent, you can replace them. We talked about it a few weeks ago with the Colts running backs. Like, it doesn't matter. We just keep plugging someone in there. The offensive line's good, and they keep doing really well for us. And I think back then is probably one of the first moments in football history where guys realize that, like, running backs aren't all that to trade for. Because there hasn't been a lot of blockbuster trades for running backs since Herschel Walker. So that's my theory.
Not a lot. Like, honestly, not a lot. Basically this trade set up a decade.
It's sort of a dynasty
of Cowboys greatness. And I can tell you that in the past 20 years, they have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 10-win seasons or better. That's not to say they haven't won their division, because, again, they're playing in the NFC East. No offense to the NFC East. But in the last 20 years, they've been, you know, typically third or fourth in the division. A lot of like third, fourth, or fifth place finishes in the division. There was a
three years
in a row they went 5-11.
That's the early 2000s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like Quincy Carter and those guys. Yeah. The Cowboys, well, Jerry's going Jerry, right? Like Jerry sometimes puts some really good teams on that field, though. Like there's been times where the Cowboys have had enough talent to do a lot of things. Like we can trash Jerry. Jerry's a yin and yang. Like there's been times like I think the last like the first few years of Dak Prescott in Dallas, those teams were good enough to win Super Bowls. I really believe that those teams were good enough. Not now, but they were. The offensive line was good. Zeke was strong. Dak was a pretty solid game manager early on. Could make the throws when you needed them to. The defense was good. Like everything about those teams was good, but like Jason Garrett's ineptitude and play calling kind of crippled them a little bit. And you can go back further than that with like, I think Garrett and Romo and Owens and Witten and I think Marion Barber was the running back. Dez Bryant too. But like, I'm going back pre-Dez Bryant. I think when I'm like Marion Barber, Terrell Owens, Jason Witten, maybe Dez was there too. Like some of those Cowboy teams. Barber was there. Yeah. Some of those Cowboy teams were excellent. And if the
Wade Phillips?
Wade Phillips is, I think, the coach before Garrett. So whatever Wade Phillips ended. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Wade Phillips is a great defensive coordinator, but it's been proven time and time again he's not a great head coach, right? Don't get me wrong. Nothing wrong with being a great defensive coordinator. Wade Phillips is a hell of a defensive coordinator, but he's not a great head coach. And there's been Cowboy teams, and it's easy to dump on them, but there have been some excellent Cowboy teams that should have gone a hell of a lot further than they did. This is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, it makes perfect sense. The trade set up pretty well for the Cowboys. They ended up getting, I can't even really explain it because they ended up getting a ton of picks, basically. They got some conditional picks based on players, and if they waived a player, they got a pick. They ended up making a separate deal where they actually got to keep the players and the picks, which I don't fully understand how that happens, but they ended up with 8 picks from Minnesota between 90 and 92. And they turned that into a bunch of other deals as well. They made deals with the Steelers and the Niners and the Raiders, the Houston Oilers, the Falcons, the Chiefs, and the Patriots. And they eventually turned it into, like Steve said, a dynasty. Emmett Smith was probably the big prize out of there. But like you said, very few running backs. Would you put Emmett as one of the like those running backs worth taking, or is it his offensive line?
I think the 90s Cowboys offensive line is probably the greatest offensive line ever assembled. That doesn't mean Emmett Smith was a bad running back. It just means that was the best offensive line I've ever seen. So that's my feeling on it.
It's just one of those trades that kind of boggles the mind a little bit. Here's exactly what everybody got. So this is a three-team trade because everybody forgets about the third team here. The Chargers got running back Darren Nelson. The Vikings got Herschel Walker, Dallas's third pick in 90, the Chargers' fifth pick in 90, Dallas' 10th round pick in 90, and their third in 91. So not a whole lot paid here. And the Cowboys got two linebackers, a cornerback, a defensive end, Minnesota's first, second, sixth in 90, first, second in 91, first and second in 92, and third in 92. Like, you don't see that kind of haul now. I mean, what did, the most recent blockbusters typically involve, like, a first or a first and a second? You usually don't see teams moving a first round pick unless it's, like, a game changing deal. It kind of blows your mind to think about and look at this. I do want to talk about how this team actually looked. So from 89, where they went 1-5, they went up to 7-9 the next year, Jimmy Johnson in his second year coaching. And then they went on a pretty ridiculous run. Well, I mean, they went divisional round.
When it actually, let's give it its proper due. It's the last time the Detroit Lions won a playoff game. It is.
Poor Detroit. Man, there's a lot of teams that are crow in the NFL. There are just a lot of bad, like long, long suffering fan. Every time I think, man, the Jets are awful. They've got a long suffering fan. Oh, Cleveland is also in that. All the Lions. Oh my God. What the Falcons haven't really, they've won some games, but they keep choking away. And now the Chargers are doing it. It just keeps adding and adding and adding. And all I keep thinking is there's like six good teams in the NFL. And up until recently, the Chiefs were in that list. I mean, the Chiefs used to be terrible. They were good, and then they were bad. They were terrible. So yeah,
I think most teams. You sound like a Patriots fan right now. I think a lot of teams have gone up and down. It's just these last 20 years have been so good to you guys that you haven't noticed that everybody's fan base. Like now, there are the all-time stinker franchises, i.e., like the Browns, and even the Jets have had moments where like you know the sun shines on a dog's ass. But like the Browns and. For the most part, the Bengals, even though they've had a couple good years, but that division's brutal. Like the Washington football team, we'll call it now, they've been pretty bad for a pretty long time now with like the odd moment of air or light shining through. But I think Patriots fans are so spoiled that they haven't seen a bad season, and that's why this season's going so badly for you. Cowboys fans have gone through tons of bad seasons. Every fan base in the last 20 years has gone through bad seasons except the Patriots.
Bad seasons is one thing. This is a little rich coming from a Colts fan who's had a long time of pretty decent success there.
Yeah, okay. So tell me the last time the Patriots went 2-14.
It's been a long time.
Exactly. We went 2-14 to get Andrew Luck. It wasn't that long ago. And that was a long run of success to go like head first into a 2-14 season.
Right. So you had one bad year of 2-14, then you went 11-5, 11-5, 11-5, and then Andrew Luck's hurt, 8-8, Andrew Luck's hurt, 8-8, and then 4-12. And then last year you went to a wild card game and lost at the divisional playoff. Or year before, sorry.
Yeah, we made the playoffs last year. Yeah.
Unfortunately, you're in the your comeback player of the year and then decided to retire. So, I mean, there's nothing you can do about
4-12 and 2-14 in a 6-year span is not fun to live through. There's back to back 8-8s. 8-8's the ultimate mediocrity. At least when you're really bad, you can get a good draft picks out of it. 8-8's just it's like kissing your sister. So my team has had bad years. Like I know what it's like to 2-14 is about as low as you can go. Like I know you can go 0-16 and you can go 1-15, but 2-14 is not a fun season to watch your team. Like if you guys go 2-14 this year, you're going to see a lot more Bucks fans, ladies and gentlemen, because Patriots fans are not all real Patriots fans. I'm not saying you're not. I'm not saying a lot of people aren't, but I guarantee you're going to see a lot of Bucks jerseys in February if the Patriots go 2-14.
Just for the record, it was 92. That was the last 2-14 season. Was 1992.
Yeah, they're not that common. Sorry, someone just knocked on my door. My cat just hip checked the glass table.
Not a problem. Basically, when Brady took over, but pre Brady, like 2000, they were 5-11.
Yeah, it's blood
20, and then it's been, and then it's been. Basically 20 years of success.
Your worst season in the Brady era was 9-7.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I get it, but like 92 was the last time with 2-14. I'm pretty sure almost everybody else in the league has gone 2-14 since then.
I'm pretty sure we won't even go 2-14 this year.
You're gonna go 3-13 because you're gonna go 4-12. You'll go 4-12, you're gonna play the Jets twice. So there you go.
Yeah.
You're guaranteed two more W's. So there you go. Like it's tough. It's tough to adjust to. And Cowboys fans have had it up and down like any other fan base.
Well, they've had more down than up, though. And this is it.
Well, yeah. It's America. So what about they've won numerous Super Bowls, and then all of a sudden they haven't. They went almost 20 years without winning a playoff game, didn't they? Like they went. Their last playoff win was in 1996, and I don't think they won their playoff game until what, 2012? I think it was.
Okay, so. 96, they lost in the divisional round.
Carolina, yes, I remember.
And then they won the division again in 98, but they ended up playing a wild card game.
Yeah, and they won.
And they lost. 99, they lost. Those are the last. That's the second last Aikman year. Because then 2000 was Aikman's, I think, last year.
Probably.
And they finished fourth in division. They went 5-11 for 3 years in a row then. Then they lost again in the wild card in 03. Didn't make the playoffs again until 06. Lost again in the wild card.
Yeah, that's the famous Romo muffed extra point.
Yeah. 2006, yeah. 2007, they lost in the divisional round.
Yep.
With Romo. Then they didn't make the playoffs in 08. Divisional round was in 2009.
Yeah. They didn't win in 2009. I think they won in like 2011, 2012 was their first playoff win in like almost 20 years. It was creeping up on 20 years when they finally won.
Yes.
What year was it when they won the playoff game? Curious.
What year was it they won which game, sorry?
What year did the Cowboys win the playoff game? Like I think they've still only won one playoff game or maybe two since then. Like I
last Cowboys playoff win. Jeez. 92? Yeah.
What? 92? What are you talking about?
When was the last time the Cowboys won a playoff game?
Oh, the last time they won a playoff game was 2018. They beat the Seahawks. I'm talking about like they went a huge stretch between the end of the dynasty and winning another playoff game again. I think it was like 2011 when they finally
won. 11. No, 11, they went 8-8.
2010?
2009, they were 11-5.
Here we go. 2000, their whole entire Cowboy playoff history. I'm bringing this up because I know there was a huge gap where they didn't even win a single playoff game. The Romo missed extra point thing was a big moment there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here we go. Missed playoffs. Jeez. Yes, it was 2009. They beat the Eagles and lost to the Vikings. Is there a cat under every inch of this house? Sorry, every time I move, I hit a cat with something. And I only have three cats, so I don't know where they're all coming from or why they're hoarding around me like the Pied Piper. But let's continue. 2009, they beat the Eagles. Then lost to the Dick Pick Vikings.
I'm figuring out any respect and pressure of names. Shout out Vasante Shanko. There you go. Oh, man. Okay.
Well, they did beat the Lions, though, so they had that going for them in 2014.
What do you think that the trade obviously set up the dynasty, but what happens to it? Like, Jerry's put together some good rosters. Garrett obviously didn't help. Although, to be honest, McCarthy isn't doing much better, and I understand that no Dak makes it a lot harder because Dak was buoying.
No Dak or no defense, definitely. There's no D in Dallas, let's put it that way.
No, there is absolutely none. And their defense at one point was kind of the envy of the league, and then all of a sudden it became nothing. So where do you see the Cowboys going at this point? Because there's that, like, the early 90s Cowboys were kind of like the team. I remember everybody Dallas Cowboys starter jackets. Well, no, Dallas Cowboys starter jackets along with Georgetown Hoya starter jackets. Don't ask why. Well, that was it. That was what I saw around here. Like, if you were seeing someone that wasn't wearing a hockey starter jacket, they were wearing the Cowboys. The Cowboys were it. The Raiders as well. But.
For our listeners out there, we live in a place that doesn't have any professional major sports franchises, right? Outside of hockey, of course. Well, we eventually got like the Toronto Raptors, which we adopted, and there's the Blue Jays. So in a lot of sports, if you predate these teams, fans kind of just bandy-hooed around. So the NFL is rife with this. NFL fandom is rife with this here. So in the 90s, in our neck of the woods, i.e. our province of Canada, Cowboys fans were plentiful. It's shocking, I know. But that being said, there was Derek, for example, who's a diehard Patriots fan, could tell me everything about the Patriots and the history of the entire franchise. Derek was a 49ers fan when he was a kid.
Interesting.
It's not interesting because there's tons of people out there that adopted another team first that was really good and in the NFL and switched to somebody else. When I was a little bitty kid, it was the Philadelphia Eagles. I loved Reggie White and those guys in like Buddy Ryan's offense. I loved the Eagles when I was a kid. I still have a soft spot for the Eagles to this day. But when I got a little bit older, Marshall Faulk spoke to me and I became a Colts fan. It was easy to switch allegiances in the 90s in the NFL because really it didn't really matter. You only got to see it one or two games a week, right? So like you bring the cable, so it wasn't like today where you had the zone. So a lot of people in these regions, and it's really hard. I know we have American listeners, that's why I'm explaining it, is you guys grow up in markets with fandoms and stuff like that, and that's how you become fans. A lot of teams, like there's not a lot of guys in Pittsburgh that aren't Steelers fans. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of New Yorkers that aren't Jets or Giants fans. There's not a lot of Miami football fans that aren't Dolphins fans. But here,
we got to remember there's college allegiances too. So even if you're in a market that doesn't technically have an NFL team, you likely have a college or university that's close by that has produced a star or top caliber guy that has gone to an NFL team, and that's where you get your allegiance from, which is far more common there than it is here. We don't see it hardly ever. I don't know many guys that were like, I don't know if there has been anyone from Nova Scotia that's played in the NFL.
No, I don't believe there has been. But like, here's an interesting fact. When it comes to college football, I cheer for the University of Miami or the University of Texas. Those are like probably the two teams I cheer for. I have no real allegiance to either, but those are the two universities I cheer for. In basketball, I'm a University of North Carolina guy. Why? Because of Michael Jordan. That's it. There's no allegiance. There's nothing. But if someone else were to come along and make me go, oh, damn, I'd probably switch. Unless it was Duke. I'll never switch to Duke. But anyway, when you live in a market that doesn't have an identity for sports, it's easy to flip-flop around. Like, I am a huge Leafs fan, but in the early 2000s when they kept buying old veterans that sucked, I turned off my Leafs allegiance. I couldn't deal with the ineptitude of the organization for a couple of years. I didn't hate them. I just turned off hockey. I was like, I don't want to see this. I don't want to hear about this. I don't want to listen to a bunch of losers complain about how more losing is going to make us better. I don't want to hear it. Or how like a 38-year-old coked out Eric Lindros was going to save our team. Like I didn't care and I didn't want to know. And it just pushes forward. The moral of the story is you were making a joke. There were a lot of Cowboys fans when I was growing up. There's not a lot of Cowboys fans still left. And that's the joke I was making earlier, that like when the Patriots go 2-14, there's not going to be as many Patriots fans as you remember. The longer this run goes, like I'm not saying you're going to make the switch, but you're going to see a lot of people slowly just do that Homer Simpson back into the bush and come out with another team's colors on. It's going to happen. And the Patriots here have a double lightning rod because their proximity is so close to Massachusetts that like we get all their games. But when they're bad, you're going to see a lot less Patriots fans, man. I've seen in my Facebook in the last 10 years people could become Patriots fans, like a lot of them. And all of a sudden, they're not talking about the Patriots anymore. Like, it's an easy way to call it bandwagon jumping. The Cowboys had a cult of personality. They were like the Beatles. Everyone talks about the 90s Bulls being the Beatles. The 90s Cowboys were also like the Beatles. It was very much a mania. Michael Urban, Emmitt Smith, and Troy Aikman were rock stars.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can tell you this. I have no issue with being a bandwagon fan as long as you own that you're a bandwagon. If you tell me that you're a Patriots fan, I'm not going to make you name the offensive coordinator from like 1996.
Here's how you gatekeep Patriots fans. And Shannon at work does it really well. He has one question that he always asks that I think is too easy. He asks, who was the quarterback before Tom Brady? I like to make it a little trickier for you. Who was the Patriots all-pro tight end before Belichick got there?
Oh, I don't even know if I could tell you.
Ben Coates.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Like, I remember watching the 1996 Super Bowl with Curtis Martin, Drew Bledsoe, Ben Coates, and those guys, and the young Bill Terry, and the young Brewski, and the young McGinnis, and all those guys. Like, I remember that Patriots team. I cheered for them. I hate Brett Favre, remember? I cheer for everybody against Brett Favre, but I remember the 90s Patriots. I remember, like, so my memory is pretty strong for a non-Patriots fan, but I've lived through this horrendous 20-year period of Patriot dominance, so I know a lot of Patriots. But, yeah, he was an all-pro, all-world tight end, and Patriots fans of today have no idea who he was, even though he played in their lifetime, because most of them became fans in this reign of terror, right?
Like, I mean, he was a five-time Pro Bowler.
Ben Coates was the man, but no one knows who he was because he wasn't part of he's not part of the Brady dynasty. He was gone by the time Brady got there. So a large portion of our region of Patriots fans have been birthed in the past 19 years. It started with the Tuck rule, which is still utterly ridiculous to me. And it's grown. I'm not saying I know there's lots of people that became legitimate fans in that frame, but it's really easy to adopt a team that successful. And I think the Cowboys, the 90s Cowboys, are like the closest thing to that. Unfortunately, the 90s Cowboys, Jerry Jones' ego would not get out of the way. And now people say Bill Belichick's ego wouldn't get out of the way. But I'd take 20 years over four. Because, I mean, Jimmy built such a great team that Barry Switzer was able to run one into the ground and still get a Super Bowl. So,
listen, yeah. Belichick came on WEEI and admitted full on that he sold out for Super Bowls. And that's why we are where we are now.
What do you expect? You couldn't rebuild with a 41-year-old delusional quarterback that thinks avocado cures sunburns.
No, and listen, if you had told if you tell the Atlanta Falcons, look, you're going to get three Super Bowls, but you're going to have to go through, you know, a bunch of years of rebuilding to get there, they'd probably say yes. Almost every fan would say, but I get the championships, right?
I mean, for the record, last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about how it was worth it just to sell out to get to the ALCS. In 2015. So, yes, yeah. I'd gladly sell my soul for three Super Bowls in 5 years. Yes, absolutely.
As for gatekeeping, I'm not a fan. And
I'm not a gatekeeper per se, but I will twist the knife. I like to play devil's advocate. I don't give a damn who other people cheer for. But
well, I was going to say, I'm fully aware that you're doing it to stir the pot and for no other reason other than that.
It's fine. But, like, you know, the thing is, I know a lot of Patriots fans, and I already know a bunch of them are already, like, ordering those Tom Brady Bucks jerseys, and they're going to be Bucks fans their whole lives, starting in like 2 weeks and pretending they didn't know you. Like, it's going to happen. If the Patriots suck for 3 or 4 years, I'm going to hear a lot less football talk around me. I know it.
Well, I know. Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to be there. I'll tell you this. I'll be there. There was a Patriots fan that we both know that I believe was a Jets fan before he became a Patriots fan.
Who's that?
He's a manager at our work.
Oh, seriously? Oh, wow. He was a Jets fan?
Yeah, that's my understanding. You can ask him about it, or you can ask John Ramia about it.
John Ramia, for the record, folks out there, you guys have no idea who that guy is. John Ramia ordered a Tom Brady Bucks jersey already, by the way. One. And two, watched NFL films a couple times. You're trying to learn enough of the Patriots to fool you that he's a lifelong Patriots fan. But
all I'm saying is I have no issue.
The Ben Coates question, by the way, just so you know.
I would have failed the Ben Coates question as well. I did. I have no issue with that.
But did you watch the 1996? Be honest.
No. Yeah,
exactly. So you wouldn't know because you became a fan during this run. Not saying you're going to turn allegiance and run away, but
yeah, I became a fan in 99.
Why did you become a fan in the Pete Carroll, their awful years? Like, what did you want pain? There was no sign of promise 1999 for the New England Patriots.
No. It was it's actually because of the Super Nintendo.
The Super Nintendo in 1999?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to explain this. Cowboys. Why are you playing Super Nintendo in 1999?
Well, I like games. I played a lot of
games. I play a ton of video games. I'm not judging you for playing video games.
Because I started playing football games. I never played football games before. I played Mario and all the other fun stuff that
that's
you play
all when awesome. You're well, let's start and, with the original question. Why were you playing a Super Nintendo in 1999? That's the original.
Oh, I didn't have a PlayStation or anything. I had what I had.
Classics. Okay. So you were playing like what, Madden 94?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like there were two teams that I liked playing. I hated playing with the Bills. I liked playing with the Rams because you could just do a sweep play. I'm not even kidding. You're just running a sweep. And it was magic. You would basically score every single time. Marshall Faulk, Kurt Warner, easy plays.
Like 99 Madden.
Yes, 99 Madden on...
Or 2000. This would be 2000 Madden. Because Warner's breakout year is 99, so...
Yes. I might have to look this up.
Did that come out for Super Nintendo? Like, I'm sorry.
It might have been...
Nintendo 64, maybe?
No, it wasn't 64. It might have been Madden 98. It might not have been...
Well, because Kurt Warner emerges in 99. See, this is like... I get it. Yeah. I get what you're trying to say. Like, Marshall Faulk. was your reasoning for that.
Yes. I enjoyed playing the Patriots. It felt like a bit of a challenge. I always pick when I play, if you ask me what team I choose right now, if I were to go downstairs and boot up Madden, what team do I choose? Choose Washington or I choose the Browns. And then I immediately make a plan to move them to London or somewhere else. And I completely rebuild them because that's what I'd rather do. And that's how I became a fan of football and started watching more closely. And then obviously games that are televised up here are typically either Patriots or Bills games.
I guess I have to understand that, like, not everybody was like me that just took to every sport immediately when they were like 5 years old and just couldn't wait to watch the next network.
I was a hockey kid through and I could tell you every single player there. And that was all I cared about. I wanted to be Patrick Waugh more than I wanted to do anything else on earth. No. And I did everything in my power.
I'll tell you that story real quick. I was also a hockey nut. And when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a goalie because I couldn't skate. So I figured all I had to do was flop around like Patrick Waugh and I could be a goalie. Or, you know, like Dominic Hasek later, but I was too little. Hasek hadn't emerged yet. So, yeah, I have the same thing with hockey. Hence why I can have historical hockey questions, but you ask me to talk about modern hockey and I suck. But, like, it just, to me, blows my mind. Like, I can go back and talk about, like, the 93 football season when I was 9. Because the NFL was, like, just one of my sports back. I can talk about the NBA in 1993. I can talk about the NHL in 93. I can talk about Major League Baseball in 1993. I just watched everything very early on. I said before in another podcast, like, the first Super Bowl I ever actually watched was Giants-Bills. But the first one I really kind of clung to me was Bills-Redskins the next year. So I've seen every Super Bowl live since that moment. You know what I mean? Since 1990. We're going on 30 years of watching Super Bowls.
I get that, but I've like, I also like this, the minute I fell in love with it, I absorbed it like a sponge.
Yeah, of course. Most people do. And that, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not, I can't gatekeep when someone became a fan of the NFL. That's utterly ridiculous. What I am saying is though, like I can remember like, so we're talking about the Cowboys. We were going to talk about the Cowboys. I remember the Cowboys playing the Steelers in the Super Bowl for the Cowboys final Super Bowl. Neil O'Donnell was the quarterback. They had a guy named Bam Morris at running back. We're talking about the Steelers. I had a fever. I could barely move without vomiting. They had me drinking Pedialytes. And, like, I remember it vividly. And I don't remember the guy's name. I think his name is Larry something. The Super Bowl MVP was a defensive back. I think it was Larry Woodson. I don't know what his actual name was. It was definitely Larry.
Okay.
He had 2 picks in the Super Bowl, and the Raiders wildly overpaid him, and he never did anything again. And it was Barry Switzer's Cowboys. Like, I vividly remember it. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't remember his name, but he went on to be absolutely nothing. But I remember thinking like, that was like, there was the birth of Slash and Cordell Stewart. Yeah, he was being used as a running back and a wide receiver before he became the starting quarterback for that failed experiment. Yeah. I remember it because it was like it was yesterday. But Bam Morris was kind of like a prerequisite to like who was playing for the Rams at the time was Jerome Bettis. Like, this is just like, this is how closely I absorbed it that I'm here reciting the starting lineup of the Pittsburgh Steelers offense in 1995, 96. It's a wild time. The next year, of course, being New England and Green Bay, and how I remember I thought that was the expansion year last year because I couldn't remember when that had actually happened with the Jaguars and the Panthers making the NFC and the AFC championship games respectively. So yes. I have a tendency, the moral of the story is the gatekeep because I just assume everybody became it's a defect in my brain where I just assume everyone became a fan of every sport when I became a fan of every sport. And that's, I think, what comes across a lot of times is that, like, I'm not as good at modern sports as in, like, I don't retain it as well as some people do because I don't care. My brain is completely dedicated to things that happened when sports were really awesome to me when I was a kid. I'm trying to make sports great again, Dave. That's all I'm trying to do. Make sports great.
I want to give a shout out to the Dallas Cowboys for a 2-6 start.
They suck. Oh, my God, they suck.
I do also want to give a quick shout out to a YouTube channel that we've both fell in love with, Urinating Tree.
If you have a chance, you get 2 hours to kill one day, which not everyone has 2 hours to kill. But if you do, watch Days of Our Steelers, the 2018-19 Steelers season. What a magical 2 hours that video is.
Excellent moderation, perfect comedy, and definitely worth the watch. Steve, where can the people find you if they want to
gatekeep? Yeah, they want to get gatekept. If you want to try me in sports knowledge and trivia, especially professional sports, by all means, find me at SteveSteele23 on Twitter and at SteveSteele23 on Instagram. You can also find me on Facebook as Steve Steele. I'm the guy taking the awkward mirror selfie wearing sunglasses indoors, for those that don't know. I wear my sunglasses at night as well. But yeah, no, that's where you can find me.
You can find me at Armchair Commentary. You can get at me and tell me why I'm not a real Patriots fan. I'll tell you to go politely fuck yourself. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
And that does it for this week's episode of the Armchair Commentary. If you want to interact with Steve or I, you can check us out again on Instagram or on Twitter at SteveSteele23, at Armchair Commentary, at Armchair Comment 2. You'll know because you'll see my logo and you'll see Steve's face. If you can support this podcast, again, head over to patreon.com/armchaircommentary. You can also check out our merch at redbubble.com. Just search Armchair Commentary. You'll see our logo there, and we appreciate anyone that grabs any merch. Show it off on your Instas, hashtag Armchair Commentary. Let us know what you've picked up. We'd love to see it. Christmas is coming up. You'd love to get that gift for someone. That Armchair Commentary mug would look fresh under anybody's Christmas tree. It has been a wacky, wacky week in the world of sports. Can't wait to do it again next week. Thank you for listening.